Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
At a time when eating healthy seems to get more and more complicated and expensive, dairy remains simple and affordable. A powerful source of micronutrients, high-quality amino acids and calcium that are all essential for healthy muscles and bones, dairy really should be enjoyed as part of a varied and balanced diet. Lovingly made with all the goodness of organic British milk, Yeo Valley Kefir is a creamy, tangy, organic yogurt packed with billions of live bacteria from 14 different culture strains for maximum gut flora diversity. Available in natural, mango and passion fruit, blueberry and strawberry flavours, the daily boost you deserve is in the yogurt aisle at all the major supermarkets. To find out more, head over to yeovalley.co.uk. Welcome back to Food for Thought and what is Series 5? Over the next 12 weeks, my special guests and I's mission is to expose why so much advice online is misleading. We'll be using proven science to sort fact from fiction and dispel everything that remains confusing in the world of wellness. I've never been so excited to bring what I believe is the best series yet. And if you haven't already heard, I'm so delighted to announce the inaugural Food for Thought Festival is happening. It's on January the 25th, 2020 in London. And much like this podcast, I'm bringing together authoritative voices in nutrition, health and fitness, but on one special day. So for more information and to get tickets, please visit Retrition.com before it sells out. Strange beliefs around women's bodies have a long history, and every day we are bombarded by new wellness claims, from restoring the balance of our hormones to the self-healing properties of celery juice. And unsurprisingly, the wellness industry is now worth over $2.8 trillion worldwide. It has never been so difficult to distinguish fact from fad, leaving many of us feeling extremely confused, including myself. So joining me today to help uncover only the truth is personal trainer, best-selling author and Women's Health magazine columnist, Alice Living. Hello, Alice.
Hi.
Hello. I think when there are so many smart women out there falling for harmful and pseudo-scientific claims, let's just delve right in. Why do you think this is happening?
I think it's a really interesting one, and I've definitely been in the position where I've fallen for some of this stuff myself too. I think it comes from a genuine place of us all wanting to live healthier, live longer. I think we've suddenly got access to all of this information which we didn't necessarily have before, where we're able to read about all of these things like our health, our well-being. Wellness has become a thing that was never a thing 10 years ago. And it's become very difficult to decipher fact from fiction, because I think many, many people enter, and I'm going to use this word even though I use it in brackets, but the wellness industry, with the best intentions and wanting to help people to achieve that elusive thing that is ultimate health and happiness, if it so exists. Mm. And I think it's difficult because I think the people that we are listening to, bar people like yourself who are obviously qualified experts, anyone can enter, and this is the dangerous thing, is anyone can enter onto social media, call themselves whatever they want, give themselves whatever kind of title they deem to be appropriate, and then start spouting off information in a very authoritative way, which for the average person seems legit. So it's really difficult for the average consumer of social media to know what is fact and what is fiction.
Completely. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it comes from potentially a very warm, loving place that it can end up with a little bit of trouble. And some recent trends, I think, have been, well, they've been a bit silly, but interesting. So one study suggested 1 in 5 women have washed inside their vagina in the past year. And apparently it's called douching. Douching? I think it's a French word, douche for the shower, as it's called. Yeah, le douche. I mean, do you know anything about this? Have you seen this? Because we know that the vaginal tissue is the most sensitive tissue in the body.
So I think it's a really interesting one. And I actually think it's a wider issue that doesn't just stem from that particular piece of research.
Yeah.
I think if we look at brands, we've seen how consumerism has actually driven us to create products that we don't actually necessarily need and then make us believe that we ultimately do really need them. And I think that's the really difficult area where it's not just feminine hygiene products, it's loads of things within the industry that we don't need. We've lived without for years and years and years, and suddenly we're being told that we absolutely need this to live, like I said, live healthier and live longer. And there's a price tag attached to it. And I just think it's a very elitist, worrying kind of trend that seems to be increasing. I think the thing with those kind of feminine hygiene products is that research has shown time and time again, there's so many gynecologists who say this is not necessary. The pH of your vagina will maintain itself and you do not need to wash yourself with any luxury product. You will naturally do that yourselves. And I think, like, unfortunately, it goes back to what we were talking about in the first conversation, which is that the marketing pitching around this stuff has been so good that people believe that unfortunately they're going to trust something that they see in the shelf in Boots over a gynecologist who's saying, you don't need this.
Oh, completely. I mean, some have even said it's a contraceptive tool, which is worrying. And I read as well that it can actually throw off the balance of the good bacteria in the vagina. So like Alice said, I think it's a bit of a money-making tool here, but you have to be careful because the internet can say a lot of things and different societal norms tell us one thing, different cultures. But at the end of the day, if you are looking for contraceptive, I'm just begging anyone listening, go to see your GP.
Yeah, but also it kind of taps into a deeper issue of the fact that we should be in some way ashamed of our vagina and ashamed of, you know, there's lots of stigma attached to our that area. Things like, oh, it you know, if it smells, or, you know, all of these things. And we're made to feel ashamed of that, which can hamper things like your sexual relationships, your self-confidence. You know, it goes much, much deeper than just it being about, you know, it not being necessary. And interestingly, when I was reading up about it and about, you know, these feminine hygiene products, the gynecologist on their website says, you know, if a woman should choose to wash her vagina with something, it should be this. And it's like, no, like, you can't, you know, it's a very grey term and a very grey statement to make, in that he's not necessarily saying you have to have it, but if you should choose to. And I just think we really need to be a lot clearer in what we need and what we don't need for our bodies.
Oh, definitely.
And making it a lot simpler for people, because as you know, in the nutrition world, things have just got so overcomplicated, and we're being made to feel as though we have to spend a lot of money on achieving that elusive thing called, like, optimal health. And it's just not, you know, you'll know in the nutrition world, it's just not the case.
No, and you correctly said that it preys on the vulnerable, and also what I call the worried well as well. It's something that happens a lot that I see, that it preys on all of our insecurities, and as females as well. It's actually, you're right, it's much deeper rooted. This is definitely not my field, but it's deep-rooted psychology there, that perhaps we're definitely not good enough or inferior, and we should always be striving for perfection, which is worrying. But what else have you seen that's dangerous recently that we should be aware of?
I think something that I've seen online, which actually a couple of people I've seen call out, which is great, and people in a position to be able to do so, which is even better. But one of them is hormone balancing. Now, I think this is a really, really interesting area, because I think it particularly preys on women and vulnerable women who feel as though, in the majority of cases I've seen, who feel as though they've almost done everything to try and lose weight and nothing seems to be working. And then this person comes along and says, but I can balance your hormones. And suddenly it's like they're cured and they are so much better and they're able to lose weight. And I think this idea of hormone balancing from people that are not endocrinologists, are not doctors, are not people with any qualification, but maybe being a personal trainer, is quite concerning.
Completely. And I think especially with the hormone balancing, it's also linked to, for instance, you yourself are very open and about having polycystic ovarian syndrome. And I think for women out there that, and there's a large majority of them, and definitely for listeners, go back to the episode we recorded with Anita, the gynae geek. So many people suffer with endometriosis and different female related problems. And this is almost saying, well, I can help you fix that if you balance this out by taking these supplements. And I mean, Alice, why do you think that it's that there are more products now targeting women and especially those under the age of 18 as well? It seems to be everywhere.
I think it's because there's money there. I think it's because we have become, like I said earlier, we've come to believe that we need to spend money on our health, and that the more money we spend on it, the better it must be. And I think big brands have cottoned onto the fact that people are willing to spend money on their well-being and their health. And so every brand going is trying to make themselves a wellness brand in some way. If you look at campaigns from, you know, all sorts of brands under the sun, they'll always try and have like a wellness angle because they realize that it's a great marketing sell. You know, use our brand and you will be healthier and happier. I just think it's...
And glow everywhere.
Yeah, and particularly when you mention the under 18s, like it's really concerning that a lot of this stuff is targeted at girls that are not, you know, they're not even out of puberty yet. Their bodies are still changing. They're still deciding who they are and who they want to be. And to come in and already make them conscious and aware of things that they don't need to be made aware of at that age, it's just such a tricky like time anyway. It's no wonder that we have the issues that we do. And I think there is completely multifactorial in what it comes down to. I think, you know, social media doesn't help, the media doesn't help, but I also think marketing products, particularly that are focused on things like weight loss or health to a certain degree at girls that are girls and boys that are under 18, is really concerning.
Yeah, I absolutely could not agree more. And I'm so counting my lucky stars that I did not grow up with social media.
Me too. Oh, gosh, I had Facebook and MySpace and maybe a bit of Bebo as well.
I used to have Bebo.
I loved Bebo. MySpace, make your own website.
Yeah, no, MySpace, it was all about that, wasn't it? Well, apparently now though, Instagram are looking to block under 18s from viewing some marketed things. So surely that's one step in the right direction.
Absolutely. And I think it's the first of many steps that we will have where we look to have a more regulated site. I think Instagram has definitely taken on board a lot of the feedback that people like Jamila Jamil have put to them by saying that this is damaging. This is... really have like harming the health of young people, and not just young people, actually loads of women who use these products. So I think it's great. I think it's definitely a step in the right direction, like you said, but I think that more can be done as well, because I think it's not just about the marketing of it. It's why are these products allowed to exist in the first place? Why are they allowed to be sold on the shelves? We might have had it removed from our Instagram feeds, but you can walk down to your local high street and get this stuff easily and you know, for not much money. So yes, it's a step in the right direction. I think it's a really positive one, and I think it speaks to a wider kind of conversation of we need to have more regulation and we need to have more experts like yourself who are saying this is really wrong, but that there is definitely more that can be done.
Gosh, yes, I could not agree more with you. I mean, I remember when Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop website suggested the idea that you could put a hunk of, £100 of jade rock in your vagina.
The vaginal egg!
Yeah, harness your feminine energy.
Because, you know, Gwyneth has a couple of, like, bob to throw at something like that. But
well, she settled a consumer protection lawsuit regarding the eggs, and it cost Goop over £100,000.
Actually, in my little bit that I got, $485,000 in the end it closed out that she spent. And I'm like, was that really worth your $100 egg, vaginal egg? And I think it, like, things like that are just everything that I hate about the wellness industry, which is that, you know, it creates this environment of it feeling as though you have to spend a lot of money to get to be at the top of your, like, it's a very elitist environment, you know. If you look at like the cost of a kombucha, or if you look at the cost of all of these kind of health products, and I just think, like, people are literally portioning off such a huge amount of their salary on, like, on these things in the hope that they're going to somehow be healthier and better. And like, to some degree, yes, okay, they might be. You know, there's some research to suggest fermented stuff is good for our gut.
Yeah, but it's not a miracle.
But it's not a miracle, and it's also not necessarily worth throwing that much money at it. You know, people are having these things one, two a day. If you add all of that up, are you not just better making some homemade sauerkraut?
Well, this is just it. And what do you think about, obviously I echo everything that you're saying there and agree with it wholeheartedly, it's very worrying. What about celebrities that endorse these campaigns? Of course, part of the problem now is we've got influencers online as well as celebrities in Hollywood or whoever. They can get up there, portray probably an airbrushed image, but you know, a certain body type, and they'll advertise a product. What can we do about this? What is your viewpoint on this?
Well, I think it's pretty, like, obvious. I think we need to have people like yourself, people like the experts that I'm starting to see get a voice within this industry and within wellness in general, who are coming out as qualified experts and saying, this is, you know, this is what I believe, these are the things that I support, but there's also a lot that's rubbish out there. I think we need to start respecting people's qualifications, people that stay within their lane and practice within their scope of practice, rather than, you know, it even comes back to, you're right with celebrities, that's, you know, people or brands, sorry, want to use these celebrities to get the most engagement with, I guess, their campaign. But also, if you look at social media, you know, often the people that do brand campaigns are not the best people for that job. It's like they chase after numbers, and it's like, just because that person's got X amount of followers, they must be the best spokesperson for this campaign. Well, no, we actually need to look much deeper than that and say, is this person qualified to be promoting this product? Are they giving a very balanced viewpoint, or are they just almost being fed a little bit of information by the brand? I think it's really interesting touching on, I guess, that, but there's very much, and this is something that I certainly experienced at the start of my, I guess I put in inverted commas, but journey, is that Dunning-Kruger effect, where you have that cognitive bias at the start of your kind of experience, where you believe that you know everything about your given subject or whatever. So at the start of my journey, I thought I knew everything there was to know about fitness. And the more that I continued down that path, I suddenly realized, oh my God, I know nothing.
The more you know, the less you know. It's
And it's so true. But I think some people, and you know, we touched on this earlier, they're doing it with the best intentions, but it's just not, it's not okay. And no matter how well-meaning your association with a brand or your being the face of may be, if it's something that is dangerous or harmful or even a little bit controversial, you need to be questioning, you know, your motivation to do that.
Well, I would also argue as well with that, it's up to, so we've got two responsibilities. We've got actually maybe three. So we've got the companies that produce stuff, we've got the people that choose to endorse it, and then we've got the consumers that choose to consume the content. So there's this three-pronged kind of thing going on, and we all need to step up and start taking responsibility. I'm sure, Alice, that like myself, you probably turned down, if I could tell you how many, even yesterday in my inbox, I was showing my colleague B, and I was like, oh, look, another detox program. They want to send me another juice cleanse. You know, they want me to advertise it. And of course, I say no, but the money would be tempting for so many people.
I walked past a cafe in South Kensington yesterday, and it's one that I had previously spent a lot of time in. And they had a big chalkboard out the front, which as people walked past said, time to detox.
And it's people's psychology. It preys, I don't think, I know that this must sound very perhaps obvious to people listening, but it's people's mental health that you can't see the impact that having these subliminal messages everywhere can have on people. And I'm sure, Alice, that being a personal trainer, you must hear some terrible shortcuts people want to consider. I mean, to get the likes of fix quick. What is it? Quick fix abs, fix quick, fix them quickly. You know what I mean.
There's so much. And I think there's lots of parallels between the nutrition world and the fitness world. In fact, I was just talking to Tally about the fact that a lot of people enter into the nutrition world from a disordered space.
Yes.
And the same with the fitness world. You know, when I entered into the fitness industry, it was because I had done a body transformation, and I truly believed that because I'd done it, everyone else should be able to do it too. And yes, it was well-meaning, but it was absolutely not the case. And like I was saying earlier, I suddenly realized that there was a lot that I didn't know, and I had a lot of learning to do. But I still think that we very much have trainers in the industry who are monkey see, monkey do. You know, I've done it, therefore you should be able to do it too. And it's really simple, and it's just about having a calorie deficit. And you know how much that gets on my tits. But I just think, particularly within the fitness industry, we become very black and white about our approach for a lot of people. I'm not saying this is everyone, but a lot of people become very black and white. You know, they negate any sort of like nuance within the nutrition world. They sort of just say, you know, it's very black and white. You need to have a calorie deficit, and you need to look at energy in versus energy out. Well, you're the first person that will sit there and say that it is so much more complicated than that.
It's too simplistic.
Of course. And that is definitely something that frustrates me within the fitness industry. And the other things are, I think we still very much fall into the category, for the majority of people that I see, of overtraining and under recovering. And those two things have such a huge impact physiologically beyond what I think people realize. So like, their immune function is going to decrease, things like their bone health, their recovery, they're going to have decreased cognitive function, they're going to fatigue, their mood is going to be terrible.
Hormones for females.
Exactly, your hormonal profile. So I think we often confuse, I guess, health with aesthetics. And I know that's something that you've definitely spoken about, and I have experienced completely. So I'm sitting here as someone who's been through that journey. But we confuse the idea that the way we look determines our health. And that's absolutely not the case. And so someone may look physically very fit. They may be very muscular. They may be very lean. But actually, on paper, they may not be having a period. And they may be sleeping terribly. And they may be massively fatigued and not able to make it through the day without having a nap. So I think it's really important that we, within the fitness industry, take a step back and to some degree have a bit more of a holistic approach to how we practice with our clients. And I've certainly something I've done with myself is not just look at the fitness that my client is doing, the exercises my client is doing on the gym floor, looking at the much bigger picture. So yesterday I had a new client, and within our consultation we spoke for an hour about loads of different things, about how she's sleeping, her stress levels, you know, looking at like just her general behaviours throughout the day. So is she sat at a desk for a long period of time? Can we get her outside into nature more? And if you look at it as much more multifactorial than just, you know, the very simplistic approach that I touched on earlier, it just has a lot more of an engaging feel, and it's something that someone is able to sustain for the rest of their lives, rather than getting someone in and saying, right, calorie deficit, 12 weeks in, out, you're done.
I know. And I think using different examples, I remember in clinics, one of the first studies we used at university looking at body composition in a module was one of models in Fashion Week in New York. And they took a large sample, I think it was over the course of 3 years, just checking in on people's body composition. And we're talking very, very slim women. And back in the 90s, the kind of ideal at the very beginning or end of the 80s, don't quote me on the time period, was that kind of very, very thin, not strong at all, aesthetic. And actually the models had such a high body fat percentage, it was worryingly unhealthy. And high body fat percentage. That's because the organs can cling on to fat. It doesn't mean their insides are healthy. And because you've got a lack of muscle mass as well, it just means your stores are very different. So it just goes to show you can't judge a book by its cover.
Absolutely not.
And Alice, you've seen a shift of importance from physical health to mental health as well, now, haven't you? Like you said with your clients, I mean, what do clients ask for the most? And what kind of shifts have you seen?
So I've definitely seen a shift. And I think because a lot of people follow me on social media, I think the clients that I get now are very much looking for a more holistic approach to their fitness and a more sustainable and long-term view on strength training for their physical health, strength training for confidence, strength training for bone health, strength training for longevity of life and optimal movement. So they respect the fact that it's much, much more than just body composition. And I think in terms of my clients, I would like to think that almost all of them would see health as being the goal rather than it being weight loss. Don't get me wrong, I do still have people that want weight loss, and that's
but that's okay.
Absolutely something
body.
That we can cater to, and if that's their choice, that's absolutely fine. But a lot of people do have more of health as their goal, which I guess it's a little bit less tangible. So it can become a bit complicated, but that's when we start to set gym-based goals. So let's look at having some gym-based goals, which we can set over 12 weeks, and let's see between now and then how much we can achieve. And those kind of tangible goals are how you get them to draw that focus away from just jumping on a scale every day and saying, oh my God, it's gone up by a pound. Yeah. Because I've been in that position. I know how detrimental it can be to your mental health. And I don't want anyone that sees me to feel that pressure or to put that pressure onto themselves. So it's really nice to be able to take someone on that journey where you can really see the transition both physically and mentally in them, because you see them suddenly really engage in their fitness in a way that they never have before, because they've never had someone take them through a session where they're like, oh, I can really feel myself getting stronger and I can feel myself, you know, getting more confident in this exercise.
I mean, whereas, I can speak firsthand how empowering that is.
Yeah, whereas previously they would have just run on a treadmill for 40 minutes thinking that was the thing that they had to do to get fit. So it's really rewarding for both myself and I hope for my clients. But just in general, I think the industry is going that way too. You know, I've seen big shifts in class environments. I've seen, you know, we have a long way to go, but I do think that classes are becoming a more positive environment, that we're having a lot more respect for recovery, mobility, all of these kind of things.
I mean, do you still think that we're being told thin is better still, and maybe in the fitness world in particular? I mean, how do you see that one shifting?
I think either it's subconsciously or consciously, I think, yes, unfortunately, that messaging is still happening and is still seeping into the media and seeping into social media. And
it's going to take many years.
It's going to take a long time for that to be undone. But I think there are such wonderful people out there championing against that message. You know, I just said I was with Tally. I think she's doing amazing things within the fitness space to help people heal their relationship with exercise. I think about people like...
because it can be so daunting, can't it, for someone to walk in of a different body shape into a gym-based environment where classically in the media it's portrayed, especially if you look back in the 80s with the leotards, with people just gym bunnies running around all one body shape size.
Absolutely. And I don't think it's even just about your body shape. I think it's about sometimes it's being a woman in a very male-dominated environment. 100%. I think sometimes it's about stepping into space that feels quite elitist in that, you know, if you know what you're doing, you're at the top of the tribe. But if you go in as a newbie, you can feel very inferior. So I think gym intimidation, which is what I'm going to call it,
love it,
is really, really common. And it's probably something that I get messaged about almost daily for how to help people overcome that. And my biggest tip is that you deserve your space on that gym floor just as much as the next person. And everyone was a beginner once. Everyone has to start somewhere. Yeah. So you have to try and put the blinkers on, because you are showing up to do something that's positive for yourself, and you really, really shouldn't worry about what anyone else is doing or saying around you. And I have to say that half the time, half of those people that are probably those kind of gym bros that are like doing bicep curls in the squat rack don't know what the hell they're doing anyway. So just ignore everyone and just make sure that you focus on the positive stuff that you are doing for yourself in that special time that you've given allocated to going to the gym.
Put your headphones on, focus on you. I mean, one thing that I get a lot in the clinic at the moment, it's one we're actually going to do a whole episode on, but I hear a lot about ketogenic diets being spoken about from a fitness point of view in gyms, all these sorts of dietary trends that should not be recommended in those environments either. Do you witness some of that? Do you see it around?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I haven't seen the ketogenic diet being spoken about as much. I think that was like 2-3 years ago that I saw that as being a big trend. And thankfully now I know that there's been a lot of research. Even I think Martin McDonald posted yesterday about that. Is it Hall et al. That did the research on the ketogenic
diet?
There's
so many now.
Yeah. So I think actually it's something that I feel is being slowly put to bed. Obviously, you'll still have people that like champion that message who are clearly misinformed. But I do think that we are starting to see that one die a death. I think just moving away from, I guess, ketogenic, but the low-carb movement, I think, is still a thing. I think it's particularly within women something that we feel as though we have to lean towards to lose weight, and I think that's something where people are also misinformed, and that's a very like faddy myth that I think has clung on for as long as possible.
I wish I could tell every woman out there you can eat all the carbs in the world and it would not make a difference. It is your overall diet. It's one of those things that, you're right, it's very female centric.
Very and I think I think that's something that I see more often than the ketogenic diet, which I guess is to the extreme of that end. But I think on the whole, I think you're absolutely right that we need to start having a bit more regulation in terms of how much personal trainers do in when it comes to nutrition, because that is the concerning point. It might not be that it's the ketogenic diet, but I have absolutely seen a lot of personal trainers give nutrition advice beyond their scope of practice.
I find it very difficult. So I'm glad you've actually brought that as a subject up, because I know firsthand they don't really get enough on a level 3 PT course.
None.
Like practically exactly.
Maybe an hour?
Yeah, and even an add-on course doesn't make them a nutritionist.
Yeah.
So that is a worrying subject.
And I think the issue is that we need to respect the fact that it is such a huge thing to give advice on nutrition. It's such a personal, complicated thing that, like, we are just not equipped. You know, and this is where I've come to respect how important it is to be qualified, is that, you know, I would never be able to sit next to you and give someone nutrition advice knowing that you've gone through years of degrees, CPD, and everything you've done to get to where you are now. And even now, you're still not done with your learning. If someone can sit there having done an hour in their PT course and, you know, maybe an extra CPD course for a couple of days, maybe, not sometimes not even that, it just is, it's a bit insulting.
Well, it can affect people. I think people forget nutrition can affect long-term health. So it can have short-term and long-term consequences, which is, it's so crucial to remember. But at least recently, one thing that I saw, which was rife, is that the detox teas have been banned from Instagram, haven't they?
Completely banned?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought the advertising had been banned, but I didn't know that they've been completely banned.
So I think that was the latest step, is that they've cut down the advertising, and now companies that are cropping up that are advertising in these things are being shut down pretty quickly if we all report them.
Well,
so
that I did report many a time, and I actually got a message back. This is the most infuriating thing, was I got a message back saying this profile doesn't contradict Instagram's terms of practice, whatever. Yeah. I can't remember, but I was just like furious at the fact that I was like, why not?
I know.
But that is a very positive step.
I know, but it's a lack of education again and understanding. So until you may still think you're doing no harm by having a product or advertising a product like that, like Alice said at the beginning, it's very difficult. But the good news is, I think, amidst all the pseudoscience we're seeing, more and more interest is gaining. You know, people want healthy relationships with food, don't they? They want to know how they can share a healthy way of eating that doesn't impact you negatively.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we all want to, like I said, and I keep saying, we all just want to be this elusive thing that is healthier and happier. And I think actually, and I'd written a little note about this, but I think the idea that we constantly have to be self-improving is a slightly concerning one. Like, I'm sure that for a lot of people that come into your clinic, not a lot, but maybe some, I'm not sure, they're probably doing all right. Their nutrition is probably okay.
Oh, believe me, they surprise themselves. I'm like, do you know how well you're actually eating?
Yeah, and I have the same with clients. I'm like, you know, they come in and think, oh, am I doing that right? And is this wrong? And I probably have a bit too much bread. Mm. And I look at their overall, you know, lifestyle and whatever, and I'm like, you're actually doing okay. And I think this idea that we have to be constantly improving, constantly bettering ourselves, it feeds into this idea that we're just never good enough. And I think that's actually a really dangerous place to be. And it's definitely somewhere I've been, where I was reading like a different self-help book every week, and I was constantly feeling as though I had to do more. And this idea that more is always better. And actually that's not the case. You know, for the majority of us, we're kind of doing okay, you know.
It's extremely interesting you mentioned self-help books, because I know they can have a place, but on our podcast about happiness with a professor that studies that area, he said that self-help books, this is his opinion I'm just voicing right now, I know that they can be very beneficial for people, but he said there are actually so many of them out there now that are just making a buck because they are preying on your
vulnerabilities. And also but feeding into that idea that you need to improve on yourself. And, you know, at some point I just stepped back and I was like, do I need to improve on myself, or am I kind of okay the way I am? And I think we all of us can do that. Like, we're all pretty good as we are, you know. Like, yes, you can probably always do a little bit more to eat better or to, you know, have a healthier lifestyle, I'm sure. But like, is that extra 10% worth it for like that feeding into that idea that we're somehow not good enough?
And I think you've been on such, I mean, obviously from a friendship point of view, but also as someone consuming your content online on the Alice Living page, it used to be Clean Eating Alice. We've already discussed that on a previous podcast episode.
Skip back to that one.
skip back to that to have a listen. But Alice has been on a huge, huge journey, especially around nutrition and fitness. And you see food now more socially as well, don't you, Ra? And you see all the enjoyment, and it's just a different place.
I think it's just a different relationship. I think you have to heal the fact that you may have come from a very disordered place. And I think many of us have experienced that to some degree.
Everyone has a relationship with
food. Yeah, it's almost everyone has had some sort of disordered thinking or behaviours around food. And I think I certainly was there. And you really have to heal that. And I think you're absolutely right. You come to appreciate when you sort of come at the other side of that and the fog has cleared, that there is so much more that goes into our relationship with food than just what it is, you know, the nutritional content of it. It's so much more than that. And, you know, it's just a bigger subject than I came to appreciate. You know, I saw it, going back to what we were saying, as so black and white. To me, it was so simple. Oh, it
no
just had
colour.
To be, yeah, in and out, and, you know, balancing that out every day. And it just lost its enjoyment. And I think I do feel as though, and I know it sounds a bit cheesy, but I do feel like I've come really, really far. And it's nice to be in a place where you just feel really comfortable and happy again with just, I guess, there's no such thing as normal, but eating relatively normally.
Well, it's relative to you. And I think, Alice, just hearing you say that will help so many people. And we do have lots of questions from followers for you today.
Oh, okay.
So Alex has said, will intermittent fasting help me build more muscle?
Well, I guess, I'm sorry to be annoying, but that does actually come down to just energy and that one does a little bit, because if you want to build muscle, you need to have a slight calorie surplus in most cases. Not if you're for a lot of newbie lifters, they can build muscle with being in a deficit. But I think IF is just a longer fasting period than if you had breakfast, so you're basically just having a wider gap. But I'd hope that you were still eating the same amount as you would if it were just in a regular 24-hour window. So I think it's really important to just look at more what you're having within that eating window, and are you eating enough to be able to fuel the training that you're doing. Something
answer.
That I would say about IF is, if you're doing heavy lifting training sessions in the morning, I don't necessarily, and this is a personal thing, but I don't think that IF is that great for you to get the most out of those sessions. I think that if it's a light to moderate exercise session, absolutely fine. You probably feel great. But if you're doing a long, long run, or if you're doing a heavy lifting session and you're then not eating before, but then also not fueling for quite a long period of time after that, I would start to be slightly concerned, and also look at things like how's that impacting your recovery.
Yeah, very, very well answered. Lorna has said, I'm a competitive bodybuilder and I really struggle to cope post-show when I put on weight. Have you experienced this? How do you move past it?
Oh, Lorna.
Yeah.
I have to be totally honest here. I find the world of bodybuilding to be a slightly terrifying and concerning one. You know, I've seen so many people who have been on that journey and that roller coaster of emotions, and I guess it really taps into some of the stuff that I was talking about previously, which is the long-term impacts of eating in an energy deficit. So not eating enough to fuel your body, probably under recovering as well, and therefore what that would do to your health. I cannot tell you how many women that I have spoken to or heard from who have competitively bodybuilt who suffer still from hypothalamic amenorrhea, so the loss of their period,
and body dysmorphia.
and oh god, so many other body dysmorphia, disordered eating, eating disorders. I think it's rife with lots of really concerning behaviours, and I'm not saying that what you're doing isn't necessarily fulfilling you. I'm sure it is, and I'm sure that you tap into that competitive element of it, which I totally get. But I would be really, really aware that if you're saying it's impacting your mental health, whether you want to make the decision to continue on that path. I think there are so many other positive ways in which you can challenge your body in a healthy way that aren't competitive bodybuilding, which essentially comes down to the subjective decision of a panel of supposed experts. So I would really, really look at how you can transition away from that movement potentially and get yourself in a better space to be able to embrace exercise in a really positive way rather than seeing it as this competitive kind of I'm going to have to say unhealthy environment.
Well, living with a fear of weight gain constantly is definitely not great for anyone's psychology. So yeah, very, very thoroughly answered. And I really hope that you're okay, Lorna. So Carla has said, sorry to ask, but I drink a detox tea most mornings to lose weight for my wedding as nothing else is working. I've got 4 weeks to go. What should I do now?
Rhea, have you got a podcast on detox teas? You've got a post on it.
We do. We have lots of posts. We have a blog.
I think your best bet, Carla, is to... I'm going to direct you to my wonderful friend Rhiannon's information because I could probably try and do it justice on here, but I think she is the expert in this area, and I would direct you to why these things might be a little bit more damaging than you first realise.
We did a whole BBC, I'm just trying to remember what interview it was, BBC Radio 4, I think, interview on detox tea as well, which was really interesting. Yeah. You can still access it on the iPlayer.
So I would send you to those, Carla.
Yeah, no, good point. So Alice, thank you for answering those difficult questions
for us. My
pleasure. We're moving on to the best part, which is the fact or fiction round.
Woohoo!
Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Fact or fiction to the following. The slimmer you are, the healthier you are.
Oh my god, I've just sorry, I forgot which one was which. Oh my god, fiction.
Skipping breakfast helps you train harder.
Fiction.
You should drink at least 8 glasses of water a day.
Fact.
Pregnant mums shouldn't exercise.
Fiction.
You can never have too much coffee.
Fiction.
Ooh.
Although I love coffee, so if you're sitting there thinking, damn it, I've just had my fourth cup, I'm with you.
No, stick to Alice's original answer. Women should use lighter weights than men but more reps.
Oh, fiction.
Can you delve into that very quickly?
Oh yes, I mean, like, there's absolutely, I actually blame a lot of the kind of 80s pin-up models who said that they only ever lift light weights to not build bulk muscle. You're not going to bulk. You're going to build muscle, but it's not going to, like, it's so difficult to build muscle, guys. It's so difficult to even lay down the tiniest bit of muscle. I promise you, people spend years trying to get like a little bit bigger. So you are not going to bulk.
Perfect. Drinking alcohol helps you sleep.
Fiction.
After a workout, you need to drink a protein shake ASAP.
Fiction.
Cellulite means you've got too much excess fat.
Oh, fiction.
And sweat means you've trained hard.
Fiction.
Brilliant. Well done, Alice.
10 out of 10. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Excellent quick fire round. And that brings me on to the end of the podcast.
I know,
nearly.
It's gone so quickly.
It has. But as with every guest, we do finish with a food for thought. So mine today would be that with an ever-increasing number, as we've discussed, of self-proclaimed health gurus, both online, whose nutritional qualification is nothing more than a lifetime of eating, we must fight the culture of celebrities emerging as authorities on nutrition and health. And Alice said quite rightly, we need to tap into more qualified advice out there and start looking for it ourselves, because these self-appointed health gurus aren't really doing anything wrong by encouraging healthy eating. It's just the way they go about it. And some with their immeasurable social media influence, surely there's a responsibility as well to ground their promises in evidence. I mean, I feel we need to call out for that a little bit more as well. All sharing unique definitions of healthy, they appear to offer a similar trend of restriction. And you'll rarely find a mention of the nutritional degree, which teaches the evidence-based biochem, the immunology, pathophysiology, and psychology required to dictate what someone should and shouldn't be eating. I mean, It is immense. Never underestimate the studying.
Can I just add something in there as well? Is that you say dictate what someone eats, but actually that's the farthest thing that you do.
Exactly.
And I think this is the difference, actually, and one of the main differences that I see between people that are qualified experts like yourself and not, is that there is much more dictating from the people that are unqualified, and there's much less in the people that are qualified. It's much more about choice. It's much more about encouraging that person to make their own decisions.
It's a kinder ethos, and it's not a one size fits all thing. And thank you for adding that, because that really frustrates me. And I find, as a health professional, you know, yes, I'm using evidence-based research, which means there are lots of studies that dictate whether something or not works. But I know perfectly well that everyone is individual and unique, and some things work for some and others not really. So a deep lack of understanding from these self-appointed health gurus has only served to encourage impressionable teenagers and young people to adopt unsustainable and dangerous dietary regimes. And as Alice said, it is extremely scary. And if you do see someone shouting one size fits all, please just a red flag should go off in your brain. But Alice, if you could share one thing for our listeners, one food for thought today, what would that be?
Oh, what would my food for thought be today? Well, I think it's definitely something that I have suffered with. And I think it's that comparison syndrome. It's like we constantly have to compare ourselves to others. And I think particularly as we've been talking today about exercise and nutrition, I think it's really important that we bring that lack of comparison and that trying to reduce the amount that we compare ourselves to others into both of those worlds. That we're not looking at what the person next to us is eating, that we're not copying someone else's workout because it seems to be working for them. And we really start to look at ourselves and make decisions based on what we want to do. What do I want to eat? What do I want to how do I want to exercise, rather than following a kind of a dogmatic kind of approach where you're literally just listening to what someone is saying and doing exactly as they say. I think it's really important that we have a more personalized approach now, that we realize that we are in the driving seat, and that comparison is basically drawing away all of that enjoyment out of probably the things that we want to do. So I think if I could encourage everyone to do a little bit less comparing, a little bit more and have a little bit more autonomy over how they approach their fitness and nutrition, that would be the best thing for me.
I think you couldn't have said that better. Alice, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, your experience, your years of training now with us on the Food for Thought podcast.
It's my absolute pleasure. It's my favourite podcast.
Yay.
And I'm so honoured to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. If you enjoyed this episode, you'll absolutely love what's coming next week. So make sure you click subscribe to be the first to hear it. And please do leave a 5-star review. It really does help to get our podcast out there, to reach those higher highs in the charts, and to help more people. For more information about my Retrition Clinic, books, healthy recipes, events, retreats, and so much more, please visit retrition.com and follow me at Retrition on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.